Good morning. I attended a meeting with Bishop Cesar Punsalan, the chairman of the board of the Philippine Council of Evangelical Churches at ATS. And reflecting on Yolanda, he told us that Super Typhoon Yolanda was running at a speed of 305 miles per hour. So that is rated Category 5 by PAGASA. And he also said that Tacloban is just 2 meters above sea level. So you can imagine what happened. And Bishop Punsalan also said that it will only take 4 minutes, and I also researched on it, and he is right, for a human being to be underwater without oxygen, then after that, you are done. So goodbye, Philippines. And imagine the storm surge that hit Tacloban. So imagine, one of the negative things that happened there was the weather forecasters were telling the people in Tacloban that there's going to be a storm surge. But of course, the people there do not understand, and there is no equivalent word for storm surge in Bisaya or in Waray. So I don't know if Glenn is here. So they were not, you know, they just think that, maybe it's just a storm. Maybe some of them said if the weather forecasters were saying there will be a tsunami, so maybe they would have been, you know, running for their lives. But storm surge, so they didn't really prepared that much. And according to GMA News, on November 23, 2013, Yolanda damage jumps to 22 billion pesos. So that's just November 23. We know that more damage were found out later that date. And then the death toll that time was 5,209. So it said that this included damage in infrastructure, in agriculture, not just in Tacloban, but in Mimaropa, Calabar Zone, Bicol, the entire Visayas, and Caraga. So that's my province. So when we looked at this video, or in the newspapers, or in the internet, or in Facebook, maybe we have asked ourselves at one point or another, where is the hope? Or is there still hope? And we know that after the super typhoon hit, we were so shocked to hear that there was looting, theft, and rape, among others, due to the lack or absence of food, clothing, and shelter. So we ask, what is hope? In an article in InTouch magazine, author Patricia Raybon wrote, "It's hard to imagine, but hope wasn't always considered a good thing. In the ancient world, poets and writers dismissed the concept as a cruel joke of the gods. It was a vice that lured gullible people to believe in a better future, only to let them down." She continued to write that hope was just another word for disappointment, a kind of glitter, according to Greek poet Euripides, that beckons many men to their undoing. Generations later, philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche called hope the evil of evils. Imagine, because it prolongs men's torment. That's why we have a saying, when I tried to give up hope, I felt much better. Diba? But for us Christians, hope is a very positive thing. It can carry us through whatever adversity as we anchor our hope on Jesus Christ, the hope of glory. Like if you are writing your thesis and you're staring at your computer screen for like 4 hours and nothing good comes out from your brain. You hope against hope that this too shall pass. Or the hope that's in the story that I got from Pulpit Resource about our rabbi named Hugo Grin, who was sent to Auschwitz as a little boy. In the midst of the concentration camp, in the midst of the death and horror all around them. Many Jews held onto whatever shreds of their religious observances they could without drawing the ire of the guards. One cold winter's evening, Hugo's father gathered the family in the barracks. It was the first night of the Hanukkah, the Jewish Feast of Lights. The young child, Hugo, watched in horror as his father took the family's last pad of butter and made a makeshift candle using a string from his ragged clothes. He then took a match and lit the candle. "Father, no," Hugo cried. "That butter is our last bit of food. How will we survive?" "We can live for many days without food," his father said. "We cannot live a single minute without faith and hope. This is the fire of hope. Never let it go out, not here, not anywhere." And little boy Hugo became a rabbi and lived to tell the tale. So APNTS students, when you feel like your hope is gone, especially you, thesis writers, you can learn a lesson from Hugo Green, from his father. Never let your hope go out, not here at APNTS, not anywhere. A couple of weeks ago, Dr. Lan preached on faith, blank, and love. So in our church, we were assigned, he will preach on 1 Thessalonians 3, and then after that, I preach on 1 Thessalonians 4. So he gave me a clue on what to preach next. So I just filled in the blank, okay? Hope. He showed us that the believers in Thessalonica do not have great problems on their faith or faithfulness and love, but hope was very hard for them to come by. Where's Thessalonica? Oh, okay. And this church was facing persecution. The Zondervan NIV Study Bible wrote that the purpose of Paul in writing this letter was, one, to encourage the new converts in their trials. Number two, to give instruction concerning godly living. And number three, to give assurance concerning the future of believers before Christ returns. The same information is written in the introduction of 1 Thessalonians in my official Bible, the New King James Version Red Letter Edition. It writes that the theme of this letter is not just the returning of Christ, but also the life of the believer in every practical relationship, each aspect of which can be transformed and illuminated by the glorious prospect of his eventual return. So with this in mind, let us glean at least two lessons as we reflect on our question, where is the hope? Verses 1 through 12 tell us that there is hope when believers live according to the will of God. For Gordon Fee, the mentor of Dr. Land, the opening sentence in verse 3 is in fact a series of oppositions. So let us see how he presented it. So this is the will of God, that you be holy. And the oppositions for you be holy are abstaining from sexual immorality, each one knowing how to possess his own vessel. Other scholars refer to vessel as the body, and others also refer to vessel as the wife, as the weaker vessel, which is not true anymore these days. Okay? And then another opposition is no one overstepping the boundaries and cheating his brother or sister in this matter. Conclusion, for the Lord is the avenger regarding all these things. Also commenting on holiness found in this chapter, 1 Thessalonians 4, Joseph Samuel Excel, the editor of the Biblical Illustrator, explains that holiness, like sin, is many-sided. And each separate side presents us with a different view of its requirements and perfections. So in this chapter, holiness stands for purity and chastity, and also for liberality in our dealings with one another. According to him, the highest form of holiness is love, a love which at once purifies the affections, exalts the heart, and conforms us to the likeness of him in whom all holiness finds its example and perfection. So, even though we are eating, just like the sermon of Dr. Modine, that is part of us showing our holiness or how we honor God. Paul is making sure that the believers in Thessalonica please God in their lives, as in fact they are already doing. So why did Paul had to caution the Thessalonians on this, specifically on sexual immorality? So let me present to you or share with you the background, perhaps you already know, of the morality at that time. Chambly reflects that the moral picture of the Roman Empire during the first century was indeed sordid. The cities of the empire were pockets of wild corruption. From the upper classes down to the lowest slaves, debauchery or extreme indulgence in sensuality ruled. It had been said that there has probably never been a period when vice was more extravagant or uncontrolled than it was under the Caesars. So in this twisted context came the gospel calling upon men to rein in and control their sexual energies. William Barclay also set the background for this. He said, in Rome, for the first 520 years of the Republic, there had not been one single divorce. But under the empire, divorce was a matter of caprice. As Seneca said, women were married to be divorced and divorced to be married. So I don't know if I can understand that. Maybe only Professor Tabuena can understand that. In Rome, the years were identified by the names of the consuls, but it was said that fashionable ladies identified the years by the names of their husbands. Imagine. So like if I was born during that time, maybe 98 to 99 AD, Marcos Helos, 99 to 100 AD, Fredericos Roselos. Those are my past boyfriends, by the way. So a man named Juvenal quotes an instance of a woman who had 8 husbands in 5 years. How did she do that? 8 husbands in 5 years. So Barclay said morality was dead. Barclay also quote Demosthenes, who said, we have courtesans. These are prostitutes with wealthy or upper class clients for the sake of pleasure. We have concubines for the sake of daily cohabitation. And we have wives for the purpose of having children legitimately and of having a faithful guardian for all our household affairs. So in Greece, home and family life were near to being extinct, and fidelity was completely non-existent. That's why Paul used the word abstain. Abstain is a strong word in Greek. It means more than simple avoidance. Phillips renders it a clean cut with sexual immorality. Chambly from Expository File says, we must totally abstain from every kind of unlawful sexual intercourse, whether fornication, adultery, homosexuality, polygamy, or sex with animals. Concerning things that are totally evil, such as sexual immorality, there can be no moderation. We cannot say drink moderately or whatever. Only total abstention. So in a way, is Thessalonica like Manila or Yangon or Seoul or Taiwan? Do we also need this message from Paul? Abstaining from sexual immorality, for example, I can still remember one of my Bible college teachers, she told us, you need to be pure before, during, and after marriage. So since Dr. Olive is here, during their wedding, one of the great advices that her husband received was from his Ninong Floyd, who said, in my covenant group, I challenged the men to stay single. And then he looked at Pastor Ron and he said, now that you are married, sir, you forgot. You said, stay married. It's okay, same auxiliary verb. Now that you are married, stay married. It's very difficult to stay married. Right, Doc Olive? I think it's easier to get married than to stay being married. Because if divorce or if legal separation is very cheap here in the Philippines, maybe the women will also name the years of the world by the names of their husbands. 2014, Mark Hill Petaliar. 2015, The Rock. 2016, Brad Pitt. Something like that. Okay? And also, we need to have trust in one another. Hopefully, we will not be like the story of a husband who is very jealous, okay, with his wife. One day, the husband called his wife. And then, of course, hello. So, mister, where are you right now? Mrs., I am just in the house. Mister, okay, turn on the blender. Okay, very good. I thought you went somewhere. Later that day, the husband called again. Where are you now? So the wife said, I am just in the house. Turn on the blender. Okay, the wife turned the blender again. That's it. Para walang duda. In English, so yeah, there's no doubt you're really at home. Then the husband went home without telling the wife. So he saw his daughter outside. Where's your mother? The daughter said, I don't know. She brought the blender with her. So husbands, you should not be overly jealous. In our context today, when our marriages fail because of sexual immorality, it would seem like hope is so hard to come by, especially for children. In one way or another, the breakdown of families is one of the causes of the breakdown of society. According to Wikipedia, and we all know this, in 1979, Mother Teresa was awarded the Nobel Prize for Peace for work undertaken in the struggle to overcome poverty and distress, which also constitutes a threat to peace. She refused the conventional ceremonial banquet given to laureates and asked that the $192,000 funds be given to the poor in India, stating that the earthly rewards were important only if they helped her help the world's needy. So when she received the prize, she was asked, what can we do to promote world peace? Maybe we know her answer. What did she say? Very simple. Go home and love your family. I was asked to write an article for the Encyclopedia of Christian Education on street children. As I was researching on this topic, I came across this quote from Italian Senator Susanna Agnelli. She said, without ignoring the roots of economics and social effects of international debt, all those on the street everywhere can be described as victims of the crisis of the family. James Grant, the late executive director of UNICEF, recognized that family disintegration is a major source of children being on the street. That's why, as ministers, we have a huge role to play. Let's educate our families, the families that go to our church, to love their children and also love their spouse. As Dr. Modine preached last Tuesday, suffering continues when we do not think about what we are doing. Verses 13 to 18, this is the street kid. Show us that there is hope in the resurrection and the return of Christ. So the Bible says, brothers and sisters, we do not want you to be uninformed about those who sleep in death, so that you do not grieve like the rest of humankind who have no hope. For we believe that Jesus died and rose again. And so we believe that God will bring with Jesus those who have fallen asleep with him. Richard East Ascough in the Journal of Biblical Literature writes that in his opening remark in 1 Thessalonians 4:13 to 18, Paul seems to contrast Christian and pagan grief, expressing his hope that the Thessalonians may not grieve as others do who have no hope. This grief without hope existed in many ancient tombstones from across the Roman Empire that attest to the notion that death was simply the cessation of life. Let us look at this Latin inscription from Beneventum, Italy. It reads, "If you want to know who I am, the answer is ash and burnt embers." Another records this statement, "We are nothing. See, reader, how quickly we mortals return from nothing to nothing." And then there's another one, "I didn't exist. I existed. I don't exist. I don't care." And this one, "Friends who read this, listen to my advice. Mix wine, tie the garlands around your head, drink deep, and do not deny pretty girls the sweets of love. When death comes, earth and fire consume everything." We Filipinos have our own version of this, right? We have a song that says, "Sa langit wala nang beer, that's why we drink it here. In heaven, there is no beer, that's why we drink it here." Ascough continues to explain that in his response to the Thessalonians' concern, Paul makes an interesting choice of words to describe the state of deceased Christians. For Paul, these Christians have not died. Rather, they have fallen asleep. 1 Thessalonians 4:13. So in such a state, they are still very much a part of the community. Like the story we have as Filipinos, usually when a loved one dies, we cry like crazy, right? So there's this one person who cried like crazy and who kept saying, "Why did you go? Take me with you. Don't leave me. I want to go with you." Something like that. So when the coffin was lowered to the ground, somebody pushed the woman. Of course, the woman was so angry. She was screaming. And then the guy who pushed her said, "I thought you want to go with him." Grieving like there's no hope. Of course, we need to go through the process of grieving. Perhaps Dr. Olive can help us with that. But we always hope that someday we will meet our loved ones. I think I told you this one before. When my daughter was like 3 or 4 years old, she asked me one day, "Mama, when we die, we will go to heaven?" I said, "Yes." And then she asked, "If we don't like it there, can we go home?" So please pray for my daughter. She just wasn't sure heaven could be that wonderful than our home here at APNTS. But we know for sure, right, that after all the requirements, after all the thesis defense, after graduation, after all the hardships in the ministry, there lies before us that hope of being with the Lord face to face, and we shall behold Him. Imagine. And hopefully, surely, I can tell my daughter when we will be in heaven, this is home. We are home. We don't have to go down to APNTS anymore. In my introduction, I shared with you the hopelessness that seemed to overpower the hearts of people affected with Yolanda. But we know that despite the devastation, one CNN reporter at least saw the resilience of the Filipino people. Bumabangon ang Tacloban. Or in English, Tacloban is rising or getting up. Getting up, yes. And there are signs of hope. Look at the eyes of the little girl. A week after Yolanda, a GMA photographer was able to take this picture of a beautiful rainbow, and for many, it signified hope. And look at this baby. Looks like my Uriel, no? Born in the aftermath of Yolanda, this is one manifestation of hope. As Christians, our hope lies in the fact that we can live holy lives and show our love to everyone. And then most especially, we hope in the coming of Jesus Christ. So where is the hope? Jesus is our hope.